And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Son of Slovenia, cool as hell. He scores the ball and he rebounds well. Don't fight the future, here comes Luka. Even losses feel like wins when you're with your good friend Tim. It's 77 minutes in heaven.
Hello, this is 77 Minutes, a Dallas Mavericks podcast, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The one Mavericks podcast that just now realized we are not the only one. I'm Tim Cato, I'm your host. I write and talk about the Mavericks for the Athletic. Today, we're doing a crossover episode with a couple people you might know. Nick Angstead, Isaac Harris, they do Locked On Mavericks, another fantastic Mavericks podcast. And to be clear, this whole only Mavericks podcast thing, it's always been a joke about how many great podcasts there really are out there in the Mavericks sphere. We decided that it was finally time for Nick and Isaac and me and Austin to get on a pod together, and we're going to talk about Jason Kidd and what he says to the media. Me and Nick are there at most of the press conferences, and who better than the four of us to figure out what Jason Kidd really means when he says all of these sound bites, all of these quotes that continue circulating, sometimes making y'all mad, sometimes just needing an explanation. So we're going to do that on this episode. I hope you enjoy.
All right, welcome in. We are here. Nick Angstead from Locked On Mavericks, Isaac Harris from Locked On Mavericks, Austin Garuya from 77 Minutes in Heaven, Tim Cato from The Athletic, 77 Minutes in Heaven. I guess technically Austin's The Athletic as well. Do we count that?
Dime, baby.
I'm dime. I'm going to count The Athletic. I'm also going to count New York Times. I'm just going to keep stealing bylines.
Whatever bylines we can get. We're gathered here today to talk about Jason Kidd, the coach of the Dallas Mavericks, and the wild quotes we've gotten recently. We've gotten just some insane quotes from Jason Kidd, and we want to first talk about some of our favorite ones and talk about the ones that stand out to us the most. We're going to do like a pseudo fantasy draft of which have been our favorite so far. What do they mean to us? And then later on, let's talk about what does it mean? Like, what is Jason Kidd's approach to this Dallas Mavericks team right now? What is his approach as a coach to the media? Is it different than his approach to players? And so we'll talk about and dissect all that kind of stuff, where the Dallas Mavericks are going, because I think we can all agree, Jason Kidd's not going away, guys. Like, this is not something to where, oh, we're seeing the final days of what Jason Kidd, even though it seems like doom and gloom, the vibes are not immaculate all over Dallas Mavericks, you know, media and fans and all that. This is not going to change as far as the Jason Kidd piece of this. Cato, right? Nick, like, this, it's not going anywhere.
It's not. It's absolutely not. And Nick, I have to do a little table setting. There are times, so you and I are consistently in this post-game press conference, and there's times, usually sit a few rows, like a couple rows behind me, so we can't quite like side, you know, like you know, throw a glance over at each other, but after Jason Kidd goes on and one of these sound bites come up,
the debrief.
We might debrief, you know, I might pop over to your row, you might sneak up to mine and just be like, that's sure a collection of words that was just said. Surely that won't go viral on Twitter and every other Mavericks fandom internet space. And so, like, even in the very moment, I think we have a pretty good grasp of like, oh boy, here we go again. Here we go again. People are not going to like that one.
Yeah, as recently as
I'm not playing, I'm watching. We got that, like you guys.
We got that one. But guys, let's just go through and what's been some of your favorite quotes from Jason Kidd, and then I'll set the table as far as where that quote came from and why it was said.
Go back to the beginning, though.
The beginning.
Yeah, I want to start at the beginning. Isaac did too.
Well, one of y'all said recently, I think it was Nick. Nick was like, recently, Jason Kidd's fired off some quotes. I'm like, I don't know if it's just been recently. I mean, we're getting a good little two-year stretch here of some, you know, the bingo card of quotes is looking pretty nice right now. But let's go back to the beginning. What are some, like, ones at the at the start of the kid experience in Dallas that, I mean, the touch
the
car. I want
to do about Reggie Bullock.
Well, here's the first drop I ever took from Jason Kidd.
Good morning, Isaac.
and then now we have, of course, the infamous.
I have to apologize that you felt that he should have played more.
This goes back to after the first three games of the season, Reggie Bullock was like the one free agent that the Mavericks brought in. He was supposed to be this wing. We all saw the vision. Like, we all saw what he was supposed to be on the team. First three games of the season, he plays 15 minutes, 17 minutes, 17 minutes. And so I asked him the question, you know, what does Reggie Bullock have to do to play more? And I get this from Jason Kidd, the head coach.
I have to apologize that you felt that he should have played more.
What did that signal to you, Isaac? Why is or Cato, why is it the first one that stands out to you?
Nick, real quick, you said this over Zoom, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. This was a road game and they were still doing Zoom interviews, which just adds another. He wasn't talking to you in person in the flesh. He was talking to you over like this TV setup. I believe it was Atlanta in the press room that was kind of set up from scratch. So he was talking into a TV television monitor at you when he said this. I just want to. That is important context to me.
That is very important. Why does this one stand out, though?
I mean, Austin, you want to go? You got something?
You know, I think it just set the tone. It set the tone that a kid is self-aware, maybe a little too self-aware. Maybe he's a sentient head coach. And it kind of set the tone. I was like, oh, he's going to be funny when he's here. And he's lived up to it. He's been funny the entire time. No one can take that away from him. You can criticize his tactics. You can criticize his rotations. But the man is funny, not intentionally, but he is very funny.
Austin, you've been one of the few Mavs media, Mavs fans that have like embraced this side of Kidd. We've seen it from the beginning, like you said. I mean, there's this dry, like very, very dry, like desert in the daytime dry humor that he has that he'll just like try and like paste over a comment that he says. But you've embraced it. What made you turn?
You know, we had so many Rick press conferences, and I think I was just tired of hearing Rick say Rick things for 10 years or just randomly pick on somebody for no reason. I destroy some random journalist's life. I enjoy kids.
Raise
approach.
Your hand if you've been there.
I believe I was there.
So. All of us just raised our hands.
You know what? I appreciate Kidd having a little humor. It's entertainment, and it adds the entertainment. If you're in for losing, for having a bad time, if you entertain me, I'm gonna be happy about it. That's one way to appease me. I'm easy, I'm like a dog.
There was that.
I was gonna say that about Rick. Like, at least Jason's not a jerk. Like to us, like at least he'll fire off some stuff. I mean, I guess you want to talk about how close to the line he gets on that. Let me say this of like what it means, because I think that was the first time. And now after, let's just say 2 years of hearing Kidd quotes, I do say this is one of my biggest, like I'll say issues with him and his like coaching style with the, as far as talking with the media, is it feels like he deflects so much. And you can look across and find the common denominator in so many of these quotes that it's so much deflecting. Like when Rick was here, and no matter who, however they lost, Rick immediately was like, hey, that's my fault. I should have drew up a better play. I should have. And you know, he's full of crap sometimes, but still, it's like he took that. How many times over the past 2 years has he said something that is deflecting of, hey, you got to ask Luka that. Yeah, you got to ask Nico that. Or my favorite, hopefully he gets an opportunity to play. We got to find more minutes for this player. Like, no matter what, it's like, bro, like that's you. Like, you're deciding if X player, Jaden Hardy, whoever it is going to play. And even down to the quote, this is an underrated one, but hey, if it's with this personnel, you have to keep asking or bending these guys to play defense.
Oh, that's like, a good one.
Okay, let's like. Shot at Nico here, you know, like, and so like so many of these quotes are, you know, even looking at the Josh Green one, when Josh Green fouled at the end of that game, he said, I didn't want to foul, but for whatever reason, Josh fouled. And it's like, God bless, like just drive by on Josh here. And I think that's my biggest thing is he deflects so much to other people for it's their fault. It's their reasons, them, not me. So I don't know.
Yeah, yes, when you say, you know, shot at Nico Harrison, obviously those two guys have a close working relationship. Yeah. You know, that comment, I highly doubt had any, you know, if Nico even saw it, like, he wouldn't care. But it is deflection, you know? It is saying, well, I'm not at fault. It's somebody else at fault. And then it almost reminds me of when you say, you know, he's like, well, that would be a question for somebody else. He's even done it with like, well, that's a question for the analytics people.
Yeah, I think that was recent.
Sorry, that was my bad, guys.
Exactly. But that came from that quote, which was him responding to a Nick tweet that it was a tweet, but it was Jason Kidd called it a report.
We had this one recently.
We take the analytics and look at everything you guys write to figure out if we can please you guys.
That was the one you have to go back where it was March 13th is pregame. And you asked him the question, right, about big man lineups. And Jason Kidd brought up a tweet that I sent about like who is the best big to pair with Luka and Kyrie, and he pointed out
who's capable of playing with one another. I think there was a report today that you saw our best big is Dwight Powell, and so when you look at that, you know, you look at him with Kai and Luka, he's the best big, and then it was I think Maxey and then C Wood. And so we take the analytics and look at everything you guys write to figure out if we can please you guys.
Oh, my God. A funny sidebar to this, for the record, is how many of these was me or you, Nick, asking the question. It feels like so many of these came from our I don't know why that is, but
we have punchable faces is what we do.
It must be that. It must be that. Austin or Isaac, please make sense of this quote.
That's all you, Austin.
This one. I also personally love this might be my top three kid quotes. First of all, there's so many aspects of this. It's first of all taking a tweet and then referring to it as a report.
Yeah.
Which is something I'm gonna start doing at my job. I'm gonna start just taking information out there and saying that I got reports and just calling everything a report. Also, it was a good tweet. It was good information, you know? It's probably useful. It's probably something an analytics coordinator would present to Kidd if he had to present a report.
Haralabov quote tweeted it that night and said, like, that's not enough possessions to know anything about it. And I was like, I agree. I was like, it was not my intention for the head coach to find it and be like, this is why Dwight's our best big.
The second part of the quote, and this is the best part, we just try to do whatever's going to appease you guys. It's just...
it is high comedy.
It's honestly like fourth wall level comedy that I honestly don't think Kidd finds any value in press conferences, and he just throws them away. Like, they're just not valuable to him in any way, shape, or form. I think from what we've seen, he has a good relationship with the players. Everyone seems to be kind of on the same page. You don't get a lot of weird leaks or stories about Kidd or the locker room.
Can we pause on that one for a second?
Yeah.
Because this is one of the positives that I think that, you know, so many of these quotes can go around Twitter and, you know, media and fans and all this stuff. And, you know, I mean, we can't even like tweet anything after a game and it's like, fire Kidd, you know, everybody's just yelling at us, like, you know, we control it. But to my knowledge, and, you know, Tim, obviously you're beat reporter and everything on the team, to my knowledge, nothing, I haven't even heard anything at all about Luka not liking him, the players not liking him, or something like that, to where, like, you know, towards the end of Rick's time, or even not towards the end, you know, you would hear different things about those relationships, but I haven't heard anything about Kidd and the players and all of that, right?
Yeah, tell absolutely. Me if I'm wrong. Yeah, no, I think when it comes to things that Jason Kidd is doing, the thing that stands out way more to me is him getting in the bottom of the dog pile after Maxey hits that game winning three. You know, that to me is more symbolic of his relationship with the players saying that they really like his, you know, calm, even approach, even if it seems like, you know, after a big loss, a avoidable loss, that it should be something beyond even. To me, it does stand out in that way. And what Austin said is really, I think you kind of nailed it, Austin, when you're like, he doesn't care. He doesn't find value in the press conferences, with a few exceptions, and I'll get there in a second. I think that Rick Carlisle over the years would have narratives he wanted to push in press conferences.
Mm.
And Jason Kidd, for the most part, has not done that. He just kind of takes the question at face
lineups value. The lineups one with Dwight Powell and Christian Wood is definitely a narrative he's pushing, though.
So the every single when it comes to narratives he's pushed, it's only I've only seen it with one player, and it's Christian Wood. Because think even was it seventh game of the season when they lost to OKC, he was like, well, you guys wanted to see a different lineup, man. A different closing lineup out there.
I forgot about that.
That was good.
There is one player that I've seen him push a narrative on, and it's Christian Wood.
Tim wouldn't know about this narrative if it wasn't for his DMs.
I don't get them anymore. Do you guys still get them?
No.
I burnt that bridge pretty quick recently.
There's a bunch of bangers still that we have not gone over. This is a classic one.
I don't always tell you guys the truth.
This was back in this one was recently. You
all
asked,
the quotes are going together.
They are all going together. This was December 16th, a win against Portland. You asked him if they ended up, you know, the Mavs, if did you guys end up coming back to living and dying by the three? And he was like, yeah.
He's
like,
yeah, I don't always tell you guys the truth.
Man, I forgot what I'd asked, but yes, I do remember this quote.
Oh man,
I'm trying to think. I might have to Google it and let one of you guys talk, but I had written something about how something to that effect. And I think he might have actually been referencing something I had written in an article just like a few days prior, because it kind of stood out to me in that way. It was like that wording, that phrasing, it might have been on a podcast as well, but I had said something very similar to that. Where I was just like, yeah, he just kind of goes up and says things. And it really made me think, because for the record, I'm very aware that Jason Kidd has listened to at least one 77 minutes episode, if not multiples. And, you know, Twitter isn't the coach. He clearly knows what's being said. Play it one more time.
The Twitter isn't the coach one was back in December 6th. It was before a Nuggets game, and fans were asking for Jaden Hardy to play. This is an away game.
Mathematically, they probably haven't thought about that side. They just feel it's just they should play. Well, that's good, and I think we all want them to play. We've been healthy, and those minutes are spoken for. When you talk about Luka at 40, someone's only going to be able to play 8.
Why does it sound like he's struggling with this?
You have Spencer at 30. Those are spoken for. So it's hard, you know, when you're healthy, you just have to be patient.
This is not slowed down.
And I know society is impatient, or Twitter is impatient, because they want it now, in fantasy leagues and all that. But this is a job, first and foremost. And my job is to put those guys in a position to be successful. And, you know, right now we got a good thing going. Hardy has to wait. Ask Josh. You know, it's.
Did you put this at 0.5 speed?
Twitter isn't the coach or the player. It's just a platform to express your opinion. And that's as far as it goes.
If Twitter was a player, what position?
Oh my gosh.
I didn't realize that quote was that long.
It would be Theo Pinson's position. yeah, that one was a really long one. And then maybe the most famous one.
I'm not playing. I'm watching, just like you guys.
This came after the blown 27-point lead against the Lakers.
Yeah, I'm not the savior here. I'm not playing. I'm watching, just like you guys. And as us, as a team, we got to mature. And, you know, we got a lot of new bodies coming back, and we have to grow up if we want to win a championship. There's no young team that's ever won a championship, mentally or physically.
Is this a narrative being pushed? Is this another example of him being like, I can't always control the way Luka wants to play, or the style, the dictation? Is he coaching Luka through the media when he says this?
Yeah, because we've heard him talk about his complaining to the refs too. Like, we've got to mature. I think that's this quote right here is exactly, we've got to mature as a team, was a direct shot at Luka. Like, this was, we talked about this on Lockdown Mavs. It's like the first time we've heard Kidd call Luka out in a press conference, when it wasn't like directly, but it was pretty much directly. Like, if you listen to it, you put the dots together.
Yeah, I mean, Luka was asked about it after that game, right?
Yeah.
I think he was after Kidd that night. And he said, I think he said something like, yeah, I probably agree with him, or something like that.
He said, it's probably true. And I'm like, yeah, oh, okay.
That's exactly what he said, yeah.
Oh, that one. That one's gonna go forever. Then the
no one's dying.
This one.
That was a great.
The no one's dying here. March 13th is after the second Grizzlies game they played. It was without Luka and Kyrie. And Tim Kalashaw asked him, are you concerned about this season? Is there concern about this season if you guys maybe miss the playoffs?
Once the season's over. No, just the regular season. That's true too. Then there has to be concern.
Okay. Pause it, Nick. What Tim Kalashaw asked there?
Understand our health.
Oh man,
I can't pause. But go ahead.
So what Tim Kalashaw, when the audio went silent, what Tim Kalashaw asked was basically, so it was, when do you have concern? And Jason Kidd answers, when the regular season's over. And Tim Kalashaw comes back and says, well, you guys could end the season, not in the playoffs, not in the play-in tournament.
Right.
And he says, well, I guess then, or, you know, what did he just say? You know,
I guess that's true.
This is where I agree with Austin, where it is high comedy, because he's just no one's dying.
No one's dying.
Is what it is. Okay, so this is where I think part of the apathy comes from. We had a big conversation on Lockdown Mavs about the apathy of Jason Kidd to us, like to media. And when he's talking to media, he's not just speaking to us. Like, we are the conduit between those words and the rest of the fans. He's talking to the fans, even though he doesn't maybe see it that way.
He wasn't talking to you when he said, good morning, Nick.
Good
morning, Isaac.
But he did say this.
Oh, it was Isaac. Oh,
Nick,
man.
That's a good question.
Y'all are the same to me.
He did.
Nick, that's a good question.
He did do that one. But what do we think about his apathy and how he's like presents himself to fans then in that way? Because does that matter? Because we've talked about earlier that it doesn't seem to matter to players, but does it matter to fans, and should it?
I think it really does matter to fans. I don't think it should matter, but I think fans want to see the level of passion they have and the level of angst they have about a game or a losing streak in their head coach. And Kidd is just not that way. But I do think that is very important, like, to a fan.
Yeah, my favorite is when, you know, Luka's getting texts, you know, and some fans are like, hey, why didn't he go out there and get that tech for Luka? So Luka didn't have to get the tech. I'm like, guys, if y'all think if Jason Kidd yelling at a ref is going to stop Luka from yelling at a ref, then I don't know. We got a different opinion about Luka talking with refs. But I don't know if it would. I don't know if that would be. I find his, like, how he talks with us about different things. I'm like, all right, I think I would, like, play around with the media too. I think I would, like, probably lie a few times just to play. Like, I would walk away and be like, dude, I just gave them a heck of a quote, and they're going to run with that so much. And that's hilarious.
Yes.
The thing that,
which is probably why he listened to 77 minutes.
The thing that does bother me though, is what I said earlier, is the deflecting of, it feels like nothing is ever his responsibility, his fault, his, any of that. But anyway,
this is another, deep cut. That goes along with that, of the deflecting, is this was November 15th after a Clippers loss. And
we're not built, you know, yet, in the sense of we only have two ball handlers. So and with the way that they play, they switch everything in their length. And so you have to have multiple ball handlers on there to have any success. And we literally had just Spencer and C. Wood out there, and we couldn't throw it in the ocean. But we...
The "we're not built yet, we only have two ball handlers" was just one of the, to me.
Whose fault is that, Jason?
Right.
Using the one team building slot they had available this summer to sign a center who thinks he's a ball handler.
Yeah. But,
you know.
Hey, his hook shots, those are fun.
The time he dribbled around Luka in the Phoenix series,
I saw Z, he ripped him and took it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
I got a couple of honorable mentions.
Yeah,
he had one earlier this season talking about the defense. He's like, "Hey, people come to see points. Nobody's here to see 80 versus 80."
he was right about that.
Yeah,
actually, can we stop down on that one? Because when we talk about him having a very dry sense of humor, especially the opening few months of his first year as head coach, he would constantly make jokes, like very obvious statements of like, you know, well, we hope Luka can play 45 minutes. And then without even a pause, without even like a comedic pause, he'd be like, I'm joking, guys.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
leaning into the microphone like I just did. And, you know, that kind of goes to the dry humor. I'm not Like, that's just the thing. That's just the thing that happened.
Twitter.
Like,
that's a joke. Yeah. That's a joke. I remember him saying
Yeah, like, early
that.
On, like, him wanting to make sure his demeanor came across the right way. I don't have an issue with that. But it's also really funny how there's times where he's, like, listing players and, you know, who could contribute or you know, could be backup point guards. And then he'll be like, I hope I didn't forget anybody. And no, you know, no disrespect meant to anybody who, you know, maybe I didn't just name there. And it's just like, it's weird because it's
people
both...
forget about Frank. Mm.
there's both this idea that he doesn't care, but then he's hypersensitive yes. about actually precisely how these quotes are interpreted because he's, you know, constantly correcting what he means. And so, I mean, I guess the way to thread that into a consistent, you know, behavior or reasoning is that he doesn't really care what he says, but because he doesn't care, he wants to make sure that nothing is blown out of proportion unless he means it.
He sees his press conferences and media and stuff like that as something that is just like he has to do, right? Like there was this one back in after a Minnesota loss when Luka and Kidd were both ejected.
I'm here because I have to be here.
And he didn't take any questions and he just got off the stand there. Like he doesn't care about this kind of stuff, but he does care about what players think. And I'm sure like we said earlier, players seem to have a good relationship with him and he wants to make sure he comes off well. And if a quote comes back, he doesn't have to answer for it to a player. He doesn't care if he has to answer to it to Nick Engstead, Tim Cato, Tim McMahon, Isaac Harris, Austin Gurria, whoever else. But he does care if like a player, if Maxey's like, oh man, like, he didn't mention my name in there, my part of this, or like if their feelings get hurt or anything, because that's the part that matters to him.
You know, one of my favorite things that he does is anytime he talks, he used to do it first year a lot, but I think he's backed off a little bit now. Whenever somebody asks him about a player, and he'll slide in there, he's just a basketball player, man. he's a basketball player, and I'm like, all right. Yes, you are correct. He is a basketball player.
A deep cut, one of my favorite quotes from last year.
This is a positive world. We'll take the positive. He was plus two.
He said, this is a positive world. We'll take the positive. He's a plus two. This is after Moses Brown's first start. He was against Cleveland. Oh, they started Moses Brown and Kristaps Porzingis together. And Moses Brown played 11 minutes and he was plus two afterwards. And he was asked about Moses Brown. This is after like Mavs Twitter had clamored and clamored and clamored for Moses Brown. He finally gets his opportunity and he did not look good in that game at all, if I remember. And he just,
this is a positive world. We'll take the positive. He was plus two.
Austin, you had something to say a little bit ago.
That's an amazing quote. I just wanted to say, I think another reason why he's pretty self-aware about what he says about players, I think he's self-aware about how his perception was of the perception of him after he left Milwaukee,
100%.
And the book that was written about him and all the terrible stories about his locker room demeanor and the way that he treated players. And for the most part, it seems like he's changed course on that, but I think he's very aware of how people perceive him when it comes to his relationship with players.
I think that's why he doesn't yell or get in refs' faces or all that kind of stuff. Like, I still think he wants to come off as not like angry guy, right? I still think and that's why he has this like cool, calm demeanor. His humor has become so dry, all that kind of stuff. Part of it is who he is. But I think part of it is he's overdoing it in that. I noticed that early on, too, that he wanted to, like, not be that guy.
And I agree. And at the same time, it can be legitimate changes he has made to his life to, you know, be less of that person, you know?
Oh, for sure. Well, like, I mean, he's consciously doing it because
I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I'm not saying it's only just a mask or only right. just like, so I don't know his personal life at all. So I'm not.
The game's over and he's just like yelling at everybody.
I mean, Christmas Day, there was in that book that he talked about.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Can I ask this question? Does he get proper credit for last year's run?
I was going to bring that up because I do have this one from, this was after the game 7 against the Suns.
Can't believe.
Yes, sir.
Huh? Hell yeah. No one believe, but everybody in this locker room believe.
Do you believe? Yes. Like, does, you know, nobody else believed except for us. And like, that's a positive. That's a funny quote to me, but it's a positive where he did have this team believing. I thought that the coaching staff did a good job last year. This year, I feel like it's been different. They've had some different like circumstances, but I thought the coaching staff did a good job this year, and they haven't this year. I mean, maybe we transition into that now. How do we think?
I mean,
the coach
fundamentally, what a coach is supposed to do is elevate a group beyond what they can be, right? You know, at least a little bit. And I feel like last season that was achieved. You know, it's you know, certainly some players are here, some players are not, as compared to last season, but you know, a similar group of players was one of the better defenses in the NBA last season, and they're not this year. And, you know, maybe looking back, there's a little bit of, the tinting of some of those game winners that were actually just like Spencer Dinwiddie hitting a bailout three, not dissimilar to some of the last second shot attempts that have been taken this year, except that they went in.
On the left wing, step back?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe we need to go back to that and kind of still. Be like, this is a consistent pattern of, okay, even though some of them went in the first year, the late game stuff. But I think that late game stuff is important because that's one of the most visible places where margins can be gained from a coaching perspective. I think coaching actually in every sport is a little bit, like it has less influence than people think. But fans can look at coaching and they can identify with it because everybody plays fantasy sports and everybody plays, you know, 2K, and everybody can imagine themselves on the sideline making the same decisions, you know, telling this player to be in the get in the game. Nobody can imagine themselves being Luka Doncic and doing what Luka Doncic does. So I think in general, coaching does have a you know, its influence on every single sport just about is a little overblown, but there are those margins to be won. And this season, my criticisms where I have criticisms of Jason Kidd and the coaching staff is that I have not seen them winning enough those margins. You know, like even I don't have the stat in front of me. I looked it up a week ago. You know, this is the best half court offense, and they're about average on after timeout plays. According to PBB stats, I believe they're 17th. You would think that there's a correlation. If you're a very good half court team, then you're probably going to be a very good out of after timeout team just by nature of that. And I haven't talked to stats guys. Maybe there's no correlation. Maybe there haven't, you know, maybe the number of after timeout plays is just not big enough to draw any conclusions from. But when you look at late in game plays where the Mavericks consistently struggle to get good shots in clutch situations, that to me is much more damning than I'm just sitting here. I'm just watching. I'm watching just like you guys, because he's not watching. He's not watching on those final plays. You know, like obviously we all know that, you know,
don't just calls the plays and shuts his eyes and turns around.
I guess I'm on a minor rant here, and I'll get off my,
come on,
get off my horse here. But you know, like obviously he's not just watching. So go look at the things that he is actually doing and assess them. And you would, you know, I think there is legitimate ammo there to criticize Jason Kidd and his coaching job this year that are not just, you know, a throwaway line at a press conference.
Well, just look at the compilation of their game-winning shot attempts, right? It's that same play over and over again. We're just like, how do they keep trying this same play over and over again? And that's one of the most, like, visually, like, apparent things. Like, oh, Jason Kidd's not, like, after that video came out, I think I had a bunch of people say, oh yeah, Jason Kidd's not a good coach. And just like, that was it. After last year getting some benefit of the doubt returned to him because of the run the Mavs made.
Austin, what letter grade would you give Kidd this year?
C+. I think, I think
he's
this year
he's passing.
Hey, we got to see what these final 10 games look
C plus
like.
In my house growing up was not passing. It was
no one's get degrees, Austin.
I think, you know, I think the team to fail, the team has to quit on you. The team is like has to not believe he gets the part where the players buy in to his scheme and to what he wants to coach. I think he hasn't done a good job this year of creating a coherent identity for the team. I think that's one thing that he did really well last year is that there were really clear roles and a really clear hierarchy and everyone kind of knew where they slotted in. And I think this year it's just kind of been a mess all season. And the way that they want to play has kind of been a mess all season. And there really hasn't been a specific style of play and they've never really gotten their defensive scheme coached into them. I think last year, even though they didn't have great defensive talent, you could always tell they were executing their scheme to the best of their ability. And I don't think you could say that this year about the team. And that's all on coaching. Executing the scheme is about coaching and about instilling those principles. And I don't think he's done that well enough this year.
And we touched on this earlier, actually, when we were talking about the I'm watching just like you guys. If that was him pushing, you know, a little bit of a narrative about Luka and it being hard to coach Luka, that should be like, I'm going to flesh that out a little bit. It is hard to coach Luka. Luka is very set in the way that he wants to play.
Yeah.
Rick Carlisle came in and tried to coach the hell out of Luka, you know, really tried to, you know, get him to play a certain way.
This pod now.
What's that?
So I might need to hop off this pod now. We got a Mavs.com show tomorrow.
Oh my God. Okay, Isaac. See, where was I?
He knocked his train right now. He successfully, Mavs.com strikes again.
Man, it worked. Yeah,
Rick tried to coach him.
Carlisle tried and then quickly realized that he couldn't and you know, kind of took the other tact to it. And Jason Kidd came in and was, you know, absolutely, totally the player's coach, took the exact opposite demeanor and was really open to the way that, you know, just letting the team play. You know, he said before, here's another quote, you know, he said something like, we're going to play at Luka's pace. And if it's good for Luka, it's good for us. It's not verbatim, but it was something to that extent
early on.
And maybe whenever there's another, you know, a next coach here in Dallas, if there's another coach coaching Luka in Dallas at some point in the future, maybe there is a middle ground to be struck where you can be a player's coach, but you can also help mold Luka into the next phase of his career. And at the same time, maybe 24-year-old Luka is not there yet. He's not ready to be molded and changed into, you know, his comfort, the way he's comfortable playing. Maybe he's just not ready yet. And so it's a tricky thing. And, you know, I don't know where one thing starts and one thing ends in terms of Luka being Luka versus, you know, Jason Kidd or any coach being able to get through to him. And so I'm just going to,
Well,
there's fleshing it out.
You look back at where Rick Carlisle coached Jason Kidd. There was that whole back and forth between, well, Rick Carlisle wants to call every single play. And Kidd's like, let's just let us play. And now Kidd is a coach. He's like, I'm just going to let him play, right? Like now I'm just going to let him play even through these runs where he doesn't call timeouts. And that's where the, you know, I'm not the savior here. I'm just watching quote came from because I asked him about not calling a timeout during a run from the other team. I think that is where it kind of stems from. If I'm going to try to point back to something from his career where he learned from, okay, well, Rick Carlisle just wanted to manage everything. I'm just going to not manage it. I'm going to do it more like a soccer coach, right? Where I'm just going to be like, all right, I set everything up and I'm just going to throw everybody out there and they do the thing.
Well, I think soccer coaches get sacked. They get fired way more often than basketball coaches because fans are like, no, it's your fault, which same thing applied from earlier, but
I have one more Kidd quote.
Mm. Oh yes, let's go.
Oh man, speaking of Luka, you know, he wants him to be Picasso and use all the paints.
Oh, how did we forget that one?
That's a great one.
Use all the paints is, first of all, a hilarious way to phrase that. That's not even
oh my gosh,
use all the paints. Like, first of all, I'm not sure he's done that. I'm not sure Luka is using different paints anymore. I think he went back to the same paints he's using.
He has like three paint painters. Yeah.
Primary colors only.
I need one of those to ask Kidd if he thinks Luka is using more paints this season. And how many paints he thinks he has.
Please show up to ask him that question.
I need to show up, and that just needs to be my only question of the season, and I'll bounce.
That's, there's a Hornets game. Show up to the home Hornets game.
And what color are those paints? Which colors is he not using?
You think he got some of these analogies from Palinka? Like working for the Lakers for two years?
Absolutely.
He's like, I'm going to try this.
Nick, give us the car one. I need the car one. This is one of my favorite analogies he's used.
So I want to, you know, be able to touch the car.
So this was in his introductory press conference, and somebody asked him about getting to work with Luka. And
so to answer your second question, I have to wait until I can look under the hood. You know, I've been on the back row right now watching it on TV, and so I want to, you know, be able to touch the car. And the more I can spend time with him, then I can answer that question. But from afar, it's a beautiful thing to watch. It's, you know, poetry in motion. If you look back at when Dirk started, he's probably a little bit more advanced than what Dirk can do at 21, 22 years old. But Dirk did finish as a Hall of Famer. And I think Luka has that same aspirations, you know, to be a Hall of Famer at the end of the day.
Dirk never skipped paint day.
Going back to his kind of evaluating his coaching, though, I think it's one of the hardest things to do from like an outsider that's not at the practices as on the coaching staff or something like that, is to evaluate coaching as a whole, because you know you kind of see the other argument too. I think we said this a while back on Locked On Mavs that like no matter what side you're on, you can provide a case, you know, confirmation bias case to prove it's like, well, how is that kid's fault if the team's not playing defense? Or look at all those box outs. They're not even, Luka, just let this guy get in, you know, Jared Vanderbilt, and get this board like it was easy. How is that kid's fault? And then you could go the other way and it's like, well, kid's doing this, kid's doing that. I just think it's so hard. It's easy for, you know, me to sit back and like laugh about the quotes, and we can do that and have fun. It's just so hard to properly evaluate sometimes without, you know, some of these tell-all pieces that the Cato's of the world writes that tells us about player relationships with coaches or the stuff that's happening. I mean, Tim, I mean, we're all waiting for the tell-all piece this summer. It's just kind of like a Cato, you know, tradition at this point, right?
I get a tweet. There's at least one person in my mentions after every, you know, really bad loss, asking exactly this question. Yep. What's the piece coming?
It's my burner. Does Jason Kidd have a burner?
Oh, I was going to ask this earlier. I feel like this is an Austin question.
His Twitter is @realJasonKidd, right? So there has to be an @fakeJasonKidd somewhere. That's probably what it is.
Do you think he's living amongst us in Mavs Twitter?
I think he's on this pod right now.
He's Kirk Anderson.
On this pod right now. He's Kirk.
We don't know. SJ? We've met Kirk in person, but we don't know if I've done a pod with SJ. She's real. He's probably like slow fan something. One of the Slovenia Luka accounts.
His talk just has never came here before, and we're like, it's him.
Istok's just an actor that Jason Kidd hired. That's why he has to come once a year. That's why he comes once a year is because Jason Kidd hires him just to prove that he's real.
I think if Jason was Istok, he could have answered that analytics question. might have answered it a little bit differently.
The actor of Istok, though, he could answer.
All right, here's my closing thought going off of what Isaac said. I agree. I think that I would not describe coaching as an iceberg where like only 10% is visible. I do think a lot of what happens on the basketball court is something that you can look at and address and say, based off past evidence. For example, like Jaden Hardy not playing in December, I do not know if he would have been affected at that point of the season. Right. But the Mavericks not signing a third ball handler, I do know, was a mistake. Reggie Bullock, you know, not playing early in the season. Now that we know that he slumps early in the year, you know, maybe some justification for that, but the Mavericks not getting shots off late in games consistently, that to me is a margin that they're failing to win in these situations. And so when it comes to on court, there is a lot that I do feel, you know, if you're rigorous and academic with it and you're serious about it, you can, you know, really look at it and make a decision. obviously, when it comes to stuff like keeping the locker room together, which we think it is, we all signs point to, yeah, it looks like it is. And all the players believe in him and they say they believe in him. You know, we can have an assessment of that. And so far, it seems positive. We don't know exactly how that's working. We don't know. Maybe this is just a locker room that would be just as happy without anybody in charge. You know, like it's impossible to know.
Kyrie,
that.
You're the coach. I'm the coach. We're the coach.
Co-managing
and then,
the franchise.
And then lastly, it's the Luka thing we talked about. When you are tasked with coaching a superstar, it is Jason Kidd's job to get the most out of Luka.
Yep.
Specifically, it's why he was hired. It's possible that there is not a person alive right now that 24-year-old Luka would really adapt or adjust or change the way he plays. It's possible Luka just isn't there yet. And so while it is Jason Kidd's job, very clearly it was stated when he was hired that, you know, a huge reason why is to develop this relationship with Luka and to bring him on to the next steps. I have no way to say, I can say that he's not doing that in certain ways about the way Luka plays, but I have no idea if that's possible or if it's an indictment on Jason Kidd. Or if he was the best chance to do it and even him can't, you know, get him to stop yelling at the refs or, taking step back left wing threes every time it's a game winning shot or any of that.
We'll never know because they'll never sign Dragic.
Any closing thoughts?
My closing thoughts is we went a whole pod and we didn't take any timeouts to do ads and we're just going to end the pod saving all of our timeouts. So.
Luckily, I get to retroactively do that.
That's great. That's...
Sorry, guys. I had to get a dad joke in there.
Oh, my God. I think our feed is also going to have ads in it. But
does Cuban have a buyback program for the timeouts?
Can I end on a sidebar question?
We've all ended on something.
Let's do this. One more thing.
I'm just going to throw this out there. Just kind of testing the waters.
Wait, Austin.
Yeah.
Next time, don't wait till it's 3 seconds left to talk.
Oh, that's honestly very timely audio, Nick. Thank you for
that's
that.
Good. Yeah, that's a good one.
To my question. Outside of the Philadelphia game, when's the last time you had a lot of fun watching Luka Doncic play basketball?
Oh, my gosh.
The Knicks 60-point game.
That was a great one.
How many months ago was that?
That wasn't even fun. Up until like the very last second. For 47 minutes, that was not a fun game.
All right.
Game seven? Goodness. I mean,
playoffs.
It's been a tough little stretch. He's been a tough watch for a little bit. It's been a while. It's been a few months.
I mean, this season's just been tough. Like, you just see, like, you immediately see the problems with the team early on. And then they make the trade for Kyrie. And it's just been one injury after another, after a clutch, then clutch loss. If it's not an injury, then it's a clutch loss. It's just been brutal watching this team, no matter if Luka's playing or not.
When did Slovenia play Eurobasket?
That was a lot of fun.
August.
I will say though, the Kyrie non-Luka games, pretty enjoyable.
Oh, here we go. They're pretty good. Go there, Austin.
Tim just left.
I'm just putting out some feelers.
Oh boy.
Kato, what do you think about it?
Kato had to leave the podcast. He didn't even
Yeah, he couldn't do it. I mean, it's a whole different style of play, right? I mean, it's just that's all I'm gonna say.
Well, I think we get stuck in
recording and then we can talk.
We watch every single game. And so we watch the 30th ranked pace over and over and over again. Like, okay, we've seen it. We've seen all this before. Luka's incredible passes and stuff. Like, he threw a behind the head pass the other night. And I was like, oh yeah, that's what he does. I was like, hold on, wait, why is that not amazing me anymore? Because I've seen it 100 million times. And then you see Kyrie like run a fast break and you're like, oh boy, this is exciting because it's new. It's the same with the young players, right? It's like Jaden Hardy comes out and you're like so excited. He does the same things that Kyrie does at times and like it's more exciting when he does it, or Josh Green or whoever. Like, the new things always gonna be more exciting, I think.
Tim, yeah. You have any thoughts?
I mean, when it comes to fun, I mean,
Tim's not in it for fun.
But, you know, I'm not as much of a fan as you guys.
You don't have to be a fan.
I'm a basketball fan. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it hasn't been as fun of a season. But I think what Nick said is a good point, is that, you know, highlight moments stand out more when the vibe is good, and the vibe has been bad for so much of the season that you know, even the moments of joy would stand out more if this team was 10 games over 500 rather than, you know, dead even. Are they losing record again?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, they're losing.
Yeah.
They're, you got the Hornets coming up, though. Excited. Yeah,
so,
two games against the Hornets, and
I need a recovery beer.
This has been Locked On Mavs, 77 Minutes in Heaven crossover. We appreciate you guys for hanging out with us. And yeah, go and listen to Jason Kidd after another game.
We'll see ya.
Peace out.
Boom.
He plays Fortnite just like me. I am 34. Don't fight the future, honey. Don't fight the future. The future is Luka, Big Dick Doncic from the home of Melania Trump. How many kids you have? Don't fight the future. It tears me apart. Don't fight the future. Please be nice to Luka. Future four-time MVP.
And so we take the analytics and look at everything you guys write.